Welcome to In the Jar. Let's have a cigar. My email is finally cleared out. I had about 1,000 emails in my inbox this week that were unread. They've been piling up on each other. And finally just got the gusto to sit down and knock it out. Which was hard because I've been on a little reading deprivation protocol. And a lot of my buddies probably make fun of me for that because I ain't got too much going on. Sorry. But no, it's part of this. I don't know what to call it. It's like a program or a course, something like that. But here it is. It's called Artist's Way. And every week, it's basically like glorified inner child work, I would say. And you're just trying to figure out a lot of things. And it's really helpful, but it's also really damn hard. And there's been like 2 separate times where, you know, I've come back like, you know, I've done a week. And then I don't do it for like a month. And there's been like 2 separate times where that's happened. And I'm sitting here like, dang, like, why do I put it off all the time? And it's because it ain't easy. But, you know, it's helping me. We're going to hit the Grand Canyon tomorrow. Spend a night out in the desert. Me and Jasper. And, you know, it was kind of hard pulling stuff together. For this episode this week, because I haven't been reading anything until the NFL draft happened last night, and I totally broke the protocol, and we're going to talk about that pretty much the whole show, I would imagine, most of it. But let's start off with some James Clear. All right, 3, 2, 1. How to connect with others. What causes old age and the recipe for success? All right, 3 ideas. 1, never outsource what you enjoy. Okay, so with this podcast, I sat on how to do this for longer than I like to admit, about 2 years. I've known I wanted to do a podcast for that long and then some. And the editing was always what was what hindered me from doing this. I could show up and run my mouth all day. That ain't no thing. But it wasn't until, thank God for Red Hawk Academy, thank God for Tim Welch, I've been branded into a guy named Luke Fry, who does all the editing for this show. And Luke and I actually just met in person last night over at the Recharge Center close to the dojo. And man, it was good to chop it up. You know, it was kind of weird, you know, having somebody doing this important work for you and never really meeting him in person. You know, I had just gotten connected with Luke when this show started about 16 weeks ago. And, you know, we've worked great together and we've never even met in person. So we got to sit around, shoot the shit. But all that to say, if it wasn't for Luke, this show wouldn't be going. And, you know, it's 'cause I don't enjoy editing. And Luke was telling me, like, damn, you know, I wish I could come up with stuff to run my mouth about every week so I could have my own pod. And I was like, that's why we're a good team, Bubba, type shit. So that's a good one. Number 2, how to connect with others. Share with someone who wants to listen or listen to someone who wants to share. Share with someone. I guess that's kind of just feeling the interaction out, right? You know, trying to figure out, like, hey, does this person want to listen to me run my mouth or not? It's kind of an unspoken temperature check, you know, and then vice versa. You know, somebody's wanting to run their mouth at me. I see that a lot, you know, being an investment advisor. You know, you kind of got to get to know people's life and ask questions and be interested and be curious. And so, you know, I've seen hundreds of people doing what I do during the day. And, you know, some folks just want to run your mouth and you got to let them in order to connect sometimes, you know, because more people don't have anyone to talk to than you think. It's just kind of what it is. All right, number three, people can help you in many ways throughout life, but there are two things nobody can give you, curiosity and drive. They must be self-supplied. If you're not interested and curious, all the information in the world can be at your fingertips, but it will be relatively useless. If you are not motivated and driven, whatever connections or opportunities are available to you will be rendered inert. Now, you won't feel curious and driven about every area of life, and that's fine. But it really pays to find something that lights you up. This is one of the primary quests of life, to find a thing that ignites your curiosity and drive. There are many recipes for success. There's no single way to win, but nearly all recipes include two ingredients, curiosity and drive. And I find, like, just being curious about the little things, like, you know, how does that flower bloom that way? You know, you're just driving down the road, or, you know, why does the wind blow a certain way at certain times of the day? You know, like little things. I've found a lot of joy in that recently. Okay. Anything else in here? That's okay. One question for you. What lifestyle do you love 80% of the time? No lifestyle is perfect 100% of the time. I love having a few days each year to relax on the beach, but I wouldn't want to do that every day or even most days. What lifestyle feels ideal for you most of the time? Cultivate that. Yeah. Because it's always a trade-off. You know what I mean? Like, nothing's ever going to be 100% cheddar. So, that's cool. It's a cool little newsletter. All right. On to the draft. So, the 2004 NFL draft just started as of the day of this shooting last night. The second round is today. By the time you guys are seeing that, we'll probably be through most of it, but wanted to recap the first round. And my Cincinnati Bengals took a gamble on a guy. So you got three big offensive tackles in that tackle room now. The Bengals drafted Amarius Mims, who is a guy out of University of Georgia that only started eight career games in college. Eight career games. And so, you know, a lot of Bengals fans were kind of like, what the hell? What's going on? You know, at least my community on Twitter. But, you know, after some thought, it really kind of looks like an investment in Joe Burrow. And a lot of the draft experts, a lot of the analysts are giving it a decent grade. And I agree. With the graph, I mean, again, I don't know why Pro Football Focus posted this graphic. I think, like, they did it twice. They did it with these three tackles. They say, who's stopping these tackles? And they put three of them, and there's people in the comments saying, like, you know, do they know that you can only play two tackles at a time? They did it with Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix, which we'll get into later, and it's just like, who's stopping this duo? And it's like, they can't both play at the same time, brother. You know, these three tackles, they can't play at the same time. But with the injury issues the Bengals have had up front in years past, and, you know, with Joe Burrow staying healthy, obviously being the number one impediment to the Bengals' success the last couple of seasons, other than the season we made it to the Super Bowl, you look at a guy like this and you say, okay, you know, I can rock with this. A lot of people think it's a developmental play, you know, big risk. Will it work out? Will it not work out? But you look at this guy in the next slide, and you see him, I guess this was at some kind of draft event, some kind of combine event. This guy looks like a tight end. He's huge. Again, he's 6'8", 340 pounds. And from what the film told me is, once this guy gets his hands latched onto your chest, he's going to drive you into the ground and he's going to win that rep. So, you know, you got Orlando Brown and you got Trent Brown kind of teaching him the ways of the Jedi, so to say. And, you know, it's like, these are big guys. It's a long season. Goodell's talking about extending the NFL season to 18 games. He apparently doesn't like preseason games. He wants to do away with them. I didn't love that because what about the guys that are trying to earn a spot, right? I had a teammate in college. His name was Michael Pierce Jr., and he still plays defensive tackle for the Baltimore Ravens. He's had a very successful career in the league, been in about 7 or 8 years now, and he was undrafted. And he made his name in the preseason hustling. He got himself a fumble recovery against the New Orleans Saints in a preseason game and made some noise. And I'm not saying he wouldn't have made it without preseason, but I think it definitely helps guys like that that have something to offer that, you know, people may not have seen yet, you know. So Goodell apparently wants to do away with the preseason. Maybe the United Football League could serve as kind of that preseason buffer where guys go to kind of prove themselves. But, you know, that's a spring league, and I guess it works out because it happens, plays out, it's playing out right now, and NFL scouts will get a chance to see the film and sign guys as they see fit. But, you know, back to the Bengals, you know, it's a long-ass season. And so the Bengals are making an investment, and you see a couple of teams doing this. We'll talk about the Falcons here in a little bit, making probably the most surprising move of the first round. But it's like, you know, the Bengals got to keep Joe Burrow safe. They just got to, in order, because, you know, the window for the Bengals is going to be Joe Burrow's health and their career, and his career. So, you know, I like the pick. You know, this kid out of LSU, Brian Thomas Jr., kind of looks like a dog. We let that guy slide. That defensive lineman out of Texas, his name is Byron something, got picked before the Bengals got the chance to. Bowers goes to the Raiders, and you're kind of left with this pick to be made. I like the pick. I didn't like it at first, but, you know, I've seen the guy. He passes the eye test. I'm a big eye test guy, you know, and I think it's the right move. So we talked about the Falcons. Here's the fans' reaction to the Falcons taking Michael Penix Jr. at number 8 in the first round. So this is after you pay Kirk Cousins $180 million contract, $100 million guaranteed. People saying, oh, poor Kirk Cousins. Stephen A. Smith ranted about it this morning on First Take. Poor Kirk Cousins, man. They didn't call him until they were on the clock to let him know they're taking this guy. And it's like, I see both sides, right? But you can't really be complaining if you're Kirk Cousins camp and you're getting $100 million guaranteed from the Atlanta Falcons. Now, do I think that Michael Penix is a great draft prospect? Do I think he'll be a good pro? Yes, I do. Do I think it was appropriate to spend the number 8 overall pick on him when you already have a quarterback that you're paying $100 million guaranteed? No, I don't. And, you know, this clip kind of sums it all up. Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, actually went downstairs to the war room to ask the GM for an explanation on why they made that pick. And you can't hear the dialogue in this next clip, but it's very clear that the GM of the Falcons is trying really hard to explain himself. And Arthur Blank's just listening to him. He's like, what, you know, he's like, here's the deal. All right. So here's what we're trying to do. All right. And it's just like, you know, if I was owning the team and I just paid a quarterback $100 million guaranteed in the offseason, I'd be going downstairs to the war room too, bro. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I think he's a great prospect. I think he'll have a good career. He's probably got some of the best arm talent for a quarterback in this draft. But with that being said, there's so many other pieces that the Falcons need to add that it's kind of a head scratcher, right? You're not going to get any type of return on investment with Penix for about 4 or 5 years minimum. Maybe they're hoping that it'll play out like a Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers type situation where, you know, a successful pro really mentors a young guy into everything that he can be. And, you know, it's one of those things. It's like it's the biggest head scratcher I've seen in a draft in a long time. And, you know, I just don't get it. I think they were really impressed with Penix at the workout that they did with him. And they were impressed with his arm, and I don't blame him. You know, the guy's got great arm talent. He fits balls in tight windows and all that. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got your guy, like, and you're getting Rondale Moore from the Cardinals, from what I understand. I think Darnell Mooney is signed with the Falcons. We might have covered that on here. I think it's, yeah, because he went from the Bears. But anyway, what are you going to do? It's one of those things. And this is what I was talking about with Pro Football Focus, saying who's stopping this Falcons QB duo. And it's like, you know, how are you going to – you're not going to play two quarterbacks at once unless you're in a Wildcat set. Maybe they do that. You know, we talked about that on the show a couple of weeks ago. Russell Wilson, Justin Fields. I'm sure they'll bring a couple packages with Fields and Wilson on the field at the same time. So, you know, kind of shake it up offensively, get a little creative. But, you know, you can't be given a bunch of looks out of a personnel set like that all the time. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe football's due for a change in that regard. But, you know, here's a Twitter space of Atlanta Falcons fans reacting to the Falcons drafting Michael Penix Jr.
Hey, what the fuck? Nobody got killed that game, bro. Fine, I'm not touching down at the bins, bro. I swear to God, boy. Ain't no way. What the fuck? Yeah, I agree. Ain't no way these niggas just did this, bro. There is no way they just did that, bro. Sell this team, bro. Please sell it, bro.
I mean, he must be like breaking something, bro. Shout out to Twitter Spaces for being the best place for sports fans to vent during times like this. When Kentucky hired Mark Pope a couple weeks ago, Kentucky basketball, and I'm sitting here wondering, who in the shit is this guy? I go to some UK, big University of Kentucky accounts on Twitter. They're hosting spaces, they're letting fans vent, and you learn a lot about what's going on and how the fans are feeling, not just, you know, what you get from the organization. And, you know, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that Twitter space. But, you know, things like this happen. The fans all react all at once, and then they sleep on it. And you're kind of like, okay, this is what it is. This is, you know, I'm going to support the team regardless, and this is how we're going to move forward. But, I mean, I can't imagine a single Falcons fan being happy on spending that number 8 pick on him, at least now, right? Kirk might get hurt this season, God forbid, and he steps in and does a good job, you know, in Kirk's absence. That might be part of it. They might be buying insurance. I don't. It's definitely a mentorship play. But shout out Twitter Spaces. You know, that's pretty fire. That you know, there's a place for fans to come together and make sense of things and vent, and in this case, maybe breaks things. Break some things, you know what I mean? All right, we're blowing through it today, boys. Today, we're talking about the draft in detail, as much detail as we possibly can, because, you know, it's happening, and we're doing it. So, This is some news. The Patriots and the 49ers have had early trade talks for wide receiver Deebo Samuel. This is per Josina Anderson, okay? Because there was trade talks about Brandon Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk, there was a bunch of drama with him. And now they're saying that the Niners are more likely to trade Deebo over Brandon Ayuk. And they drafted that little receiver out of Florida with the 31st pick last night, a couple nights ago, if you're watching this. And I think his name was Pearsall. He's out of Florida. And, you know, could be interesting. Deebo Samuel headed somewhere else. I don't know why the 49ers would try and change anything unless the players are unhappy, because it's like, you know, you made it to the Super Bowl, dude. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But that's the rumor on the street. Trey Hendrickson, defensive end for the Cincinnati Bengals, number three in the league in the last couple years in sacks behind Myles Garrett and T.J. Watt, is requesting a trade out of Cincinnati. And T. Higgins has also re-requested a trade out of Cincinnati. It's not going to happen because not only are those two way too valuable at this stage in their career for the Bengals, but also I think the Bengals just don't care what their players want. You know, the NFLPA surveys come out year after year. The Bengals are always graded low on their facilities, their player care. I can't imagine what it's like being an account executive on the business side for the Bengals, or like a low-level sales person, you know, in terms of how you're regarded. Because it seems like they don't even really regard players that highly. You know, Mike Brown, the owner, second-generation owner, ton of football history in his family. He knows he ain't getting dethroned regardless of what they do. And if you don't get a generational quarterback, you know, in the same year that you have the number one overall pick, are we even talking about the Bengals being a contender? I don't know. That's the thing. It's been years and decades of suffering for fans like me. With the Bengals, and it's clear that they don't really communicate with their most valuable players. It's the reason DJ Reader signed with Detroit. He said, well, you know, why'd you sign with the Lions? Well, it's because the Bengals weren't really talking to me about renewing my contract. And, you know, it's like, what can you do? They're not communicating with you. And the reason that Trey Hendrickson has requested a trade is because they're not communicating with him. So what are we doing? You're not talking to your most valuable players. You're not talking to the guy that is third in sacks in the last two or three years in the league. You know, do you just, like, not care? Like, what's the deal? So that's going on as well. A lot going on. And speaking of trades, I believe the Vikings traded up to get J.J. McCarthy. And part of the reason they did that is because the Broncos baited them into thinking they were going to take McCarthy, when in fact they were interested in Bo Nix, and that's who they drafted at 12. So here's the clip.
I was actively involved in trying to pretend we were moving forward. In other words,
what? So the clip cuts off, but, you know, you get the point. It's like, a lot of mind games, a lot of mental warfare, a lot of this, a lot of that. It's really interesting to see the business side of football, because it's a lot like negotiating in any other business. It's like sometimes people bluff, sometimes people use their leverage certain ways. And, you know, obviously the Broncos had that leverage at that number 12, I believe, spot for their first round pick. When in fact they were going with Bo Nix the whole time, and that's who they went with. So you've got Zach Wilson and you've got Bo Nix in that quarterback room in Denver now. And, you know, you draft a kid at number 12 overall, it's hard to say that he doesn't have the edge going into camp a little bit. But they'll definitely be battle in camp and see who comes out victorious, because you know, Zach Wilson's got some years under his belt, but, you know, they also spent a number 12 overall pick on a guy like Bo Nix, who's very promising. So here's more Bengals stuff. The second round of the draft's happening the day of this shooting. So if you're watching this, it happened 2 days ago. And here's who the Bengals have gotten on day two. Okay. So in 22, you got Cam Taylor Britt. 2020, T and Logan, two really pivotal players. And then in 19, you had Drew Sample and Jermaine Pratt. Jermaine Pratt being a third rounder and you know, one of the staples of the defense. So hopefully they can trade up and grab old Johnny Newton, this big belly gang boy out of Illinois. But I've heard he's a really promising prospect. And with DJ Reader, like we mentioned, heading out of Cincinnati, you need somebody to get in there and plug gaps. You know what I mean? Somebody big, strong, road grader, bull. Stick them hands in that chest, make that boy heart stop type thing, you know? So he looks like the man for the job. I'll tell you that much. But, you know, whenever people are talking about organizations doing something, they tend to do the other. Get this cigar going. I got my mic on 10. Y'all hearing every puff out of this hole, you know what I mean? All right, so obviously the Bears, wasn't a secret for months that they were going to draft Caleb Williams, number one overall. And that's exactly what they did. They also took Rome Odunze, however the hell you say that, out of the University of Washington. And after some moves they made in the offseason, this is their offense. So, you know, you got a great defense. And you got DeAndre Swift at running back and three very capable receivers with a very capable quarterback. And the Bears are talking about their new stadium. You know, talks have intensified with that. They've released renderings of the new stadium, and it's clear that the Bears are excited about the future. The city of Chicago should be excited about it, and I think, you know, the buzz is heavy with them right now, and it should be. If you look at this group of guys. Big upgrade from what they had last season, and an NFC North that, you know, other than Detroit, well, that's not true. Green Bay's on the come up. Minnesota will probably be bottom of that division this year, I'd say. If I were a betting man, maybe you throw Detroit in there winning the NFC North again, because who's stopping them in that division right now? And then Bears and Packers are going to have to fight for that number two spot. Probably one of those teams will get a wild card berth, I'd say, in the playoffs next year. And then, you know, Minnesota, they're probably, you know, I don't have bad things to say about the Vikings, but, you know, just compared to the moves the Bears have made and Jordan Love showing what he can do this past season in Green Bay, and then obviously Detroit being the dominant force they currently are, it's like, all right, you know, you kind of got to put Minnesota at the bottom of the barrel there right now, at least after the Bears draft last night. And that's banking on the fact that Caleb Williams is going to seamlessly integrate into the pro game, and he's going to contribute, and same with Rome Odunze, because DeAndre Swift's spoken for himself. Keenan Allen's got to stay healthy, and then obviously DJ Moore's in his prime right now as well. So that's the deal with the Bears. So Chargers fans were also not the happiest about their draft pick in the first round, Joe Alt out of Notre Dame. The reason they were unhappy is that the Chargers fan base felt like they needed some weapons at receiver. They don't really have a great receiver room, and you've got a great quarterback in Justin Herbert. They've signed J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards in the offseason, so you're going to have a run game. So it wasn't surprising to me at all that they drafted an offensive lineman, and this is what Jim Harbaugh said in response to questions from reporters. He said, I know the question is going to come up about weapons. We look at offensive linemen as weapons. You goddamn right, Jim. I love Jim Harbaugh. He is a football guy. And if you're going to establish a run game, you got to have road graders up front to do it. So maybe they'll get, they're probably banking on getting some receivers later in the draft. and you know, kind of seeing what they can do. But if you don't have receivers for Justin Herbert to throw to, it's kind of a tough deal for him, because he's one of the elite quarterbacks in the league right now. And this was interesting news to me. This isn't draft news, but guardian caps, these weird things you see on practice clips with football teams for years. These came into football after I was done playing, like the year after, and I always remember thinking, like, those look really goofy, what have you. And so here's the details. In an effort to reduce player risk and continue driving innovations in equipment technology, players will be allowed to wear guardian caps during their in-season games, NFL football operations announced. So I wonder how this pertains to the branding side of football. I wonder how people are feeling about that, because, you know, people that are casual fans already have a, you know, some people have a hard time identifying what team it is. And you're going to have this, maybe they'll put the logo over the cap or something, because, you know, what's the point of a helmet design if it's just going to be covered up like this? You know what I mean? I get it with player safety and people not knocking heads as much. I never used one of these, so I've never actually felt how it affects the impact on a hit. But this is apparently what's going on. So we're seeing a lot of changes in the game towards safety pending coming up in 2024. Guardian caps included, kickoff included, you know, and I hope they don't change too much more, because, you know, you're already starting to create a game that looks a lot different than it did when I was a kid growing up. And I'm only 27. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think that'd be a big branding challenge for a lot of these organizations. You know, if you don't have the logo on the side of the cap, you know, maybe you got to make it more prominent on the front of the jersey. I don't know. But, you know, you see all these social media posts about new helmet designs. I know the Texans apparently are getting one, and it's like, it looks like Titans colors. It could be the Titans, it could be the Texans, right? Historically, it gets kind of mixed up who's the real Oilers. I know that's a big contention between people from Nashville and people from Houston. But they're going to wear guardian caps. So that's the NFL news for the week. We're going to move on to our clips of the week. And this first one kind of resonates a little bit.
On a jog, on a jog. Great day to be alive, gentlemen. A lot of people ain't. I'm Ron, so I'm going to keep the ball out here. High and tight, son, like a new haircut. Ball security is job security. Look at me, I'm Thomas. I'm going to play patty cake with it. And it's not getting on it. All right, everybody in midfield, we're doing damn bowl in the rain.
Hey, coach, that's illegal.
Get off the field, you son, quit the swimming bulls. This ain't the damn ocean. We're doing up downs until the fat lady sings. Guess what, boys? Mama don't sing. Hey, Tom, is your mom's divorce finalized or not?
Beat. We used to have coaches at Samford, man. They would throw, they'd have Copenhagen fine cut dip. Bunch of big staff of Georgia boys is what we had. And, you know, they take this fine cut dip. It's like sand. You know, it's already hard to pack a long cut dip and throw it in clean. But these fellas, they had fine cut. And we had this big old offensive lineman coach. And he'd throw we call it a horseshoe up in his upper lip. And he, you know, he's kind of a big boy. And Good, Gordy. And it's just like, you know, this guy kind of hit the nail on the head. It's like, great day to be alive. You know what I mean? Hey, where else would you rather be? Type of deal. You know what I mean? And in the moment, you know, as a player, it's 6 a.m. You don't really want to be there. And you're just kind of sitting like, oh, God. But the farther removed I get from the game, the more I kind of get fired up. And that's probably going to be me coaching my sons in Pop Warner, you know, just cussing up a storm, dip spit flying everywhere. It's a lot of fun. So here's the next deal. That is fucking crazy, bro. Like, if you fall in, you get bit. If an alligator sticks his head up out of the water, you're falling in and getting bit. It's a beautiful piece of content. You know, it took me about 2 years to even get up on a wakeboard, let alone stay up in a water full of alligators. I remember one story about somebody that was water skiing, and they're up and they're going, and they look below them and they realize there's a school of water moccasins swimming below them. And it's like, you know, you want to talk about pressure in sports or anything else, that's pressure, bruh. And then you add on the fact that this man is getting filmed. I mean, he probably just get just as many clicks if he fell in, but then you got physical safety that you're questioning in here, brother, because those aren't little alligators, and you're going over marsh here too. So it's like the littlest. That's the thing in wakeboarding. The littlest thing, at least when you're not very skilled like me, can wipe you out fast. So I just threw this clip in here because that's balls, man. That's the balls award of the week goes to this guy. And I think he knew that when he came up with the idea for this clip. It's one thing to come up with an idea like this. It's another thing to go out and execute. You know what I mean? So that's wakeboarding's hard, but that kind of wakeboarding, you ain't never going to see me do it. Next clip.
All right, everybody knows what time it is. What time is it? Because we went hunting. Sprig, you want two finger? Attaboy. Jim, get off the pile.
Just
dude.
Inhaling it. He's old too.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Sprig, number two.
That's a reward for a hard day's work.
Jimmy, you like number two?
Yeah. Look at him inhale this bun. Bang.
Sprig, good boy, huh?
Three burgers apiece for these boys. They're eating good, baby. It was obviously a good day of hunting.
Okay.
And I mean, damn, that lab's old, man. He's got white on his snout, on his paws. You can tell he's a veteran, and you can tell they know when you pull up to Burger King, it's time to go, baby. You know what I mean? So, what else did we got? Oh, this is a good one.
Always say less than necessary. Law number four.
I hope this instrumental by talking doesn't get us in trouble on YouTube.
In a meeting or in any kind of situation, you make people inadvertently smell weakness on you.
What I'm talking a lot.
My book is a lot of communication between humans is nonverbal. Mm-hmm. We feel we sense something from you, and it communicates, and we have an impression. And people who talk a lot generally give an impression of they don't know how to control themselves. Whereas people who kind of say a little bit less, kind of speak in riddles almost, say, yeah, that's great, I'll think about it, or whatever, gives off an impression of power, as if they know more than they actually do. Mm-hmm. Because the game of power, a lot of it has to do with appearances.
So, we're getting our investment advisory practice started up out here in Phoenix, and I brought my brother on to help make some cold calls and schedule some appointments for me, and you know, it's crazy teaching someone sales that's never been in it before. You kind of gotta, like, we wrote out a script, and every time I tell them, I say, look, man, you can't say too much, but you got to get off what you need to get off, and then you got to just pause and let them respond, you know, because I've been there before learning sales. I'll be so excited about what I'm trying to talk to the person about that, you know, I word vomit on them, and then they just hang up. And it's like, I think Robert Greene, who wrote 48 Laws of Power, which is a book that, you know, has really kind of opened things up for me. It's kind of dark, but it's human psychology, right? And it's really interesting how much people will give to you when you kind of just and listen. And I mean, I say that and I'm on a show where I run my mouth by myself every week, but you know, it's one of those things. It's interesting how when you have to teach somebody something, how much better you get at that thing that you're teaching, because now you can't just slide by just doing it. You got to also be able to verbalize it in a way that's concise and effective enough that somebody who doesn't understand it understands it too. So teaching my brother's been a blessing. It's been really helpful for me and my craft too. You know, trying to get people to buy in to come in and go through our process a little bit. So I thought that was cool from Robert Greene. We'll wrap up with this one here because I actually got to run to a call here in a couple of minutes.
The other thing I've been doing recently is I chart all my habits. A Buddhist monk friend of mine, I saw his journal one day, and he had like a bunch of lines and different things, and he was charting all the different things that he did during the month. One thing that helps me with self-love is reminding myself what I'm all about. We're in a conversation, and I say, yeah, I meditate all the time. And then I go back and look at my chart, which has like meditation AM, meditation PM, check mark, all the days of the month, and I'm tracking this. If I got like fucking 5 morning meditations of the month, how can I with any conviction say, oh yeah, I meditate all the time? So what am I actually about? Who am I to myself? Who am I saying that I am? And how much of those things match up has really been helpful to me from a discipline standpoint to lock in these habits that I want to have. And it's everything from oil pulling to meditations daily to how many coffees I had in a day, whether or not I took my vitamins, on and on and on. There's about 35 different things I try and be about, but it's really helped me to lock in good habits and then to be authentically myself.
That's a good little snippet. Because habits are so important, routines are so important, and it's really easy to say you're about something but not actually be about it, because I feel like the easiest person to lie to is yourself. And you can buy into an idea, but you just because you're bought into the idea doesn't necessarily mean you're acting on it. And so I think what he's talking about there is a really powerful tool to hold yourself accountable, right? Math is the law, the language of nature, right? And if you're mathematically keeping up with your habits, I did this X amount of days this month, you don't have any room to lie to yourself. And we're all prone to lie to ourselves. And as Mr. James Clear says it best, you don't rise to the level of your ability, you fall to the level of your systems. So that's a really good system to hold yourself accountable and kind of keep you from lying to yourself. So that's the last clip of the week. I got to run to a phone appointment here right now. This is In the Jar, episode 16, with your boy Dupe. If you enjoyed this, we happen to hit you in the chest at any moment in this show, be a friend, tell a friend, roll your own smoke, make your own coffee. We'll see you next week. Make sure you subscribe to the channel if you love this right here. Thank you, boys. Love y'all.